Election Protection Bulletin with Greg Palast. At 11 today on Between the Covers, host Bethany Graybow speaks with Jesse Andrews, author of the new novel, The Haters. And at 11:30 on The Film Show, Jen Chavez speaks with local experimental filmmaker Vanessa Rennick. Also on the show, Portland Horror Film Festival organizer Gwen Callahan, Daylight's End producer Sherry Dieterling, and director Will Kaufman, and Josh Leake. That's all coming up right after Chris Andre hosting Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary.
I'm Margaret Cho, your host for Crossing East.
Well, in Vietnam, if you live with a GI, then they think you're part of two.
I am Chinese, Greek, Swedish, English, Scottish, German, Pennsylvania, Dutch.
I was born in Changsha. I don't know exactly what day they estimated the day.
On Crossing East.
Tune in this Memorial Day, May 30th, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. to hear the entire Crossing East series on KBOO 90.7 FM.
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Thursday, May 26, 2016, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, real radio for real people at 90.7 FM, KBOO.FM on the web. First, weather. Today, patchy drizzle, slight chance of showers, and then chance of showers again much later. Seems like we might as well just have said chance of showers all day long. And high around 64. West-northwest winds, which could actually, for the most part, 5 to 11, they could gust up to 18 miles per hour. And for tonight, that hovering chance of showers seems to decrease. However, we'll be under overcast skies, lows around 53. And again, chance of gusty winds for tomorrow. Again, it's going to be overcast skies, looming, highs around 64, west-southwest winds 5 to 7. And for Friday night, again, I won't even bother, I won't even say it this time, but the skies will be covered, and you'll see a low around 51. Northwest winds 5 to 7. That's it for the weather today. We have a wonderful guest. Listeners to the show will know Steve Horn from the Smog Blog and his extraordinary investigative reporting. He is going to be talking about Hillary Clinton and fracking. It promises to be a huge issue in the upcoming Democratic Party presidential primaries, California, New Mexico. All of this is coming. Steve Horn just co-wrote a piece, Hillary Clinton's Energy Initiative pressed countries to embrace fracking. New emails are out, and Steve Horn has got them in his hand, and he'll be talking about that with us a little later on the show. We keep seeming to miss Julia DeGraw with Food and Water Watch. We're looking for an update there on the Cascade Locks Hood River Divide on the prospect of Nestle in the Gorge. Just very briefly, Eamon Bundy, leader of the Ballyhoo occupiers, got a new lawyer. It's, wait for it, J. Morgan Philpott. I couldn't make this up. I really couldn't. A former Utah state representative, and Exxon shareholders are holding their meeting today. In addition to what Steve Horn has for us on those Hillary Clinton emails, he's also been at the shareholders meeting. And another big meeting going on in Japan, the Group of Seven, are wondering exactly what's up with America's embrace of Donald Trump and the white man's bourbon. Next up, Washington senators have proposed a bill that would prevent mining on about 340,000 acres of public land in the Methow Valley. That's maybe or maybe not good news. Clatsop County DA's appeal that the state bar dismissed the ethics complaint against Bundy, and now we see this new lawyer. There's a lot more between these two stories. And a woman is suing the city of Portland over claims. It's not a claim. It actually happened. So let's dispense with that word claim. She was stopped by police, ordered out of her car at gunpoint, handcuffed after being wrongly accused of driving a stolen car. Do I need to mention the color of the woman's skin? And Billings, out of Billings, Montana, owners of a coal-fired power plant in Montana say that the company that keeps it running wants out within 2 years. That's right. So arguments that all this coal is going to be emerging from the mountains of Montana turns out to be a myth. It won't be emerging out of anywhere, out of Montana, out of the ground, out of a train, because they're not going to be mining it. So there's that. They came up with the idea that the company's role as an operator is not economically viable. Well, yes, good for them. And federal prosecutors say that they fear that the backers of Clive and Bundy, or this is Clive and not Eamon here, would use names and information that could be disclosed in a case of the 2014 armed standoff, and this would be used to intimidate witnesses. These people are dangerous. They really are. I don't think we're taking them as seriously as they ought to be taken. And just a note, the University of Oregon students, about 1,000 of them, sororities and fraternities, who said that they wanted to clean up the mess that they made, but in fact it was too much. They made such a toxic waste that the hazardous waste people had to be called in to clean up after the best and the brightest of the young people of today. Aren't they wonderful? And Kevin Olive is out of prison and on a train back to California. Yes, this week Kevin was released from the MCC Chicago, the maximum security, and is now on his way to a halfway house in California. There is, however, an action alert for Jay Chase, who's in prison, and he's one, of course, of the NATO 3. He is very, very ill, and we could try to put up some information on how you can support Jay. National Center for Public Policy Research. You know, I want to talk to Steve Horn. We are just littered with headlines today. But Steve, welcome to the KBOO Airways. Welcome back. I'm going to just turn this right over to you because we've got first Hillary Clinton's emails and second the Exxon shareholders meeting. Good morning.
Good to be back. Thanks for having me, Chris.
Yeah, so could you talk a bit first about, well, I know that these, again, Hillary Clinton's emails generate moans of, I don't know what, but they're moans, definitely. What about these emails and Clinton's wavering on fracking? And deception. Well, let's say deception, too, I believe.
The emails that we get are a little bit different than the emails that are generating controversy right now that made headlines yesterday. These were emails.
Oh,
that,
yes.
related but different. So these emails were obtained from Freedom of Information Act, and actually none of these emails came from Hillary Clinton herself. These are from her State Department, though, and on a program called the Global Shale Gas Initiative. One of the reasons why we don't have, I mean, the relationship to the bigger scandal, one of the reasons why we don't have emails directly from Clinton or her closest inner circle on this is that, of course, those emails are on a private server stored at her home. And so State Farm was being honest, I guess, in giving us what they had, perhaps because she was using a private email account. That said, the emails still exhibited and showed a clearer picture. I would say not the whole picture because there's still more emails that are due to come my way in the coming months from the State Department, but offer a picture of how this Global Shale Gas Initiative works. That is the State Department's program to sell fracking around the world. And of course, this is a follow-up to a different investigation that Mother Jones did. the Mother Jones investigation came out in 2014. That was based on WikiLeaks cables. So ours was the first one to use the Freedom of Information Act to tell that story. And basically the story comes down to this. The country of Poland in particular was seen as a quote-unquote laboratory for perhaps selling, you know, spreading fracking around the world. It was very controversial both in Poland and in Eastern Europe at large, so much so that actually there was Occupy Chevron, because Chevron was a big company. And because of low oil prices and bad geology, fracking actually never raised to commercial level scale in Poland. But Poland is sort of was seen as this laboratory. It failed there. And one of the ironies of this story is that fracking actually has not spread globally, thankfully, for the world's water resources and for climate change. A lot of it has to do with geology, but that wasn't without trying. The State Department, as these emails show, had, and the Obama administration had all of his agencies working on this global shale gas initiative. The State Department was the ringleader, but it was EPA, it was Department of Energy, it was across the board, Department of Commerce. All of them were, you know, brought into line to try to push fracking around the world. That's what these emails show. And the emails show that there are many countries targeted, including Morocco. Anywhere in the world where there may have been fracking, those countries were in the United States visiting at State Department events, or the State Department and other agencies were sent abroad to go talk to people about the potential for tapping into their shale reservoirs in those countries. And so also academia was involved. Our article was pretty short. We had to trim it, but some of the things that I found through the emails was, you know, for example, academia was involved, West Virginia University, Penn State University, and these various delegations and trips were not just people in the State Department, were not just government people in the government. It was also, of course, the industry was invited on these trips. And, you know, I think the Exhibit A of the collusion between industry and, you know, government in this case is look at the launch event. And then there's an Exhibit B too, but Exhibit A is that the launch event was actually held at the United States Energy Association, which is a organization that is funded by big oil, by ExxonMobil, by ConocoPhillips, by all the big frackers. That's where the Global Shale Gas Initiative was announced by the State Department by a guy by the name of David Goldwin, and that gets to Exhibit B. David Goldwin left the State Department, and even before the State Department, he was a lobbyist, industry consultant, and industry lawyer. So before and after, that's what he did. So the revolving door went both ways for him. So through and through, this was, you know, what I would refer to as the State Department's global oil services, more or less, under Hillary Clinton's State Department.
It seems that there's no more need really for a revolving door, because the collusion between private sector and government, elected officials, and other public agencies, no need for a revolving door because it's all one big party. Also, I want to just get this clarified, because this is so, right now listeners should be on the floor pounding their head on the ground. This Global Shale Initiative, this goes back to 2010. So essentially, Hillary Clinton is using her position at the State Department to promote the fracking program around the world. That's extraordinary. Is that even legal?
That's correct. It's completely legal. The Department of Energy already does things like it. There's something through the Department of Energy called the National Petroleum Council, which again brings together people in this ring and the Department of Energy to talk about these issues on a global scale. So it's not unprecedented in that way. But what is unprecedented about the Global Shale Gas Initiative is that how well coordinated it was across agencies. David Goldwin referred to it, the guy who was the first head of the Global Shale Gas Initiative, as a quote unquote whole of government, end quote, approach to this and other energy issues, but Global Shale Gas Initiative was part of an entire bureau that was created called the Bureau of Energy Resources, which was focused on the geopolitics of energy in the United States, using things like shale gas as a geopolitical and imperial weapon across the globe. I think that coming full circle, though, you know, as I said at the beginning, the irony of the story is that fracking really hasn't spread around the world. It's in the United States, it's in Canada, it's in Argentina, and it's in China on a commercial level scale, and much more so in Canada and the United States than those other two. But everywhere else, it's been a failure, and that has to do a lot with both the global price of oil, but I think especially the tough geology of actually tapping into the shale. And so, that tells sort of a tragic story. There's all this money and human resources spent on doing it, and people jet-setting around the world to spread the technology when that time and money could have been put into, you know, things like, what she claims to be as an environmentalist and caring about climate change, who could have been doing things that would have been good for the climate, but instead that time and money was spent on trying to spread technology that didn't even end up bearing much fruit.
It's always, and meanwhile, the threat of global water shortages or global water contamination should be what a State Department official at any level ought to be focused on, it would seem. That's it, though, for today. Thank you so much. Can you just let listeners know about The Intercept, about this piece that you came out with, and some on future revelations from some of these emails?
Absolutely. Well, the article was titled Hillary Clinton's Energy Initiative Pressed Countries to Embrace Fracking, New Emails Reveal. It's up on The Intercept, and I'll be continuing to report on Hillary Clinton and other, obviously it's been election year, so stay tuned for that and coverage on Donald Trump.
Thank you so much, Steve. Always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me.
This has been Akaskadia.